Hello, and welcome back to the Automotive Podcast. I hope you're having a great day, and I appreciate you tuning in. In today's episode, I'm going to be talking about the Hudson Hornet. The Hornet definitely looks like an American car. It's kind of big and kind of full of chrome. However, it was actually a successful race car in stock car racing, or what we call nowadays NASCAR. The origins of stock car racing are very cool, and it was really focused on actually racing stock cars. And we'll definitely get into the history of the racing itself a little bit in this episode. The Hudson Hornet was first produced in 1951 by the Hudson Motor Company. The Hudson Motor Company was based in Detroit and was a fairly new company, starting in 1909. Interestingly, the name Hudson actually came from the Hudson Department Store, whose owner, Joseph Hudson, provided the capital to start this car company. The Hudson Hornet was a unique car in a very fundamental way. Obviously, there are tons of ways to build a car and how the chassis is created, which is essentially the skeleton of the car. There are two very prevalent ways of doing this. One is called a ladder frame, which is very common, or at least used to be, and is mostly found on pickup trucks today. The other type is called unibodies. The ladder frame design is also called a body-on-frame design, and it's a ladder-like structure that is created that runs the length of the car, and everything else is supported by that frame, including the body and the engine. A unibody design is where the body and chassis are combined into a single structure, and nowadays, pretty much all cars, except for pickup trucks, are of unibody design. However, at the time that the Hudson Hornet was being made, ladder frames were by far the most common way to make passenger vehicles and trucks. Pretty much everyone was using ladder frame designs. However, the Hornet was a little bit unique. It used a ladder frame design with a slight modification, and that modification was that the floor pan of the body was recessed down and the chassis rails were wrapped around them. Due to this, this design is called a step-down design, as the passengers would step down into the car. And while this doesn't seem like a major modification from a more traditional ladder frame, what it allowed was for the car to have a much lower center of gravity, because the body would sit lower on the frame. This significantly improved handling and safety because the car handled better. It also allowed the Hornet to have a very classy, low-slung look with it being very close to the ground. I'm not usually a fan of this era of cars, especially American cars that are big and chromey, but the Hudson Hornet is definitely a nice-looking car. It sits low to the ground, has a very sleek-looking body, very aerodynamic, and doesn't look overly gaudy with too much chrome or anything like that. So, for the era, the Hudson Hornet is definitely a great-looking car. Interestingly, the Hudson Hornet also broke the American mold by not using a V8. Instead, it was powered by a straight-six engine. This engine was the largest six-cylinder engine to be used in a mass-production car for the time. When the Hornet first came out, this engine was fed using a single two-barrel carburetor and had a compression ratio of 7.2 to 1. These first engines that were used in the Hornet could pump out about 145 horsepower. Doesn't seem too bad. However, that same year, an option was added where the engine could be fitted with two one-barrel carburetors, and this significantly boosted power up to about 160 horsepower. This option was called twin H power and was very popular. It started as an over-the-counter kit where you could just go to it and be like, hey, I'd like my Hornet to have more power. Can I buy this kit? And they give you everything you need and you put it on yourself. But eventually it became a dealer option, so you could get it from the dealer with this twin H-power added. And eventually it would even become a factory-installed production option. Hudson even had a fun little name for these higher performance parts. They called them severe usage items, and that was essentially what they called racing or high performance parts. It was severe usage. Now, this is an interesting upgrade from an engineering standpoint because it's not super clear why going from one carburetor with two barrels to two carburetors with one barrel each would make any difference. You got the same number of barrels. However, when you got this twin H-power option, it also came with a different intake manifold. And this, combined with the two carburetors doing their own thing, essentially allows for the fuel to be more evenly supplied to all of the cylinders. To explain this further, here's a quote from Richard Langworth, who wrote a book on the Hudson Hornet. Quote, "The secret of the amazing results which twin H-power provides is that it so accurately measures the gasoline, so evenly distributes it to each cylinder, and so thoroughly vaporizes the fuel with air that it provides what the engineers call far better breathing and combustion than has therefore been obtainable." End quote. So essentially, the engine can just run better because every cylinder is getting the appropriate amount of air and the appropriate amount of fuel to be fully vaporized and complete its combustion. With the single carburetor, some cylinders may be getting more fuel than others, so then you have one cylinder running rich and one cylinder running lean, which just doesn't allow for efficient power making. Another interesting thing to note about this engine is that it was a flathead design. This design has no cylinder head, and the valves are contained within the engine block, along with the camshaft to open and close the valves. The camshaft is actually close to the crankshaft, usually to the side and up a little bit from the crankshaft. What this means is that the combustion does not take place above the piston. Instead, there is a space to the side of the piston that has the valve at the bottom and the spark plug at the top. The valve is pushed up due to the camshaft rotating, and that pushing up opens the hole to allow air and fuel into this little space that is to the side of the cylinder. The valve is lowered to seal the chamber, and then the piston pushes up and compresses the air and fuel into that little space where the spark plug ignites the mixture for the power stroke, and that combustion goes down a little tube into the cylinder, forcing the piston back down. It's a little confusing without an image, so I will make sure to link an image in the description so you can see what a flathead engine design is like. But the key thing to understand is that there is no cylinder head, and instead everything from the combustion to the opening and closing of valves to the spark plug takes place within the engine block itself. Flathead designs are not common these days. However, at the time, they were a fairly common choice for auto manufacturers. The main advantage of flathead engines is that they are very simple and cheap to make, as there are just less parts and have less things moving inside them. This allows for good responsiveness at low speeds, and they have a lot less mechanical engine noise because not all that much is moving within them. However, the downsides of flatheads is that they have poor combustion, chamber space, and low compression ratios, meaning they tend to be pretty low on power. But despite this, the Hudson Hornet was pretty capable with this flathead inline 6 engine. It had a 0 to 60 time of 12.1 seconds, which today sounds very slow, but for the time, it really wasn't too bad. On top of this, this engine was overly engineered and was really tough. so it could use all of its power continuously without breaking down or having any issues. Things like oversized bearings, a very stiff and hard engine block, a stiff crankshaft allowed for this use of power. So really, the Hornet was a bit of a brute. Over the next couple years, the Hornet would be slowly upgraded, with the single carb variant reaching 160 horsepower by 1954, and by that time, a higher compression engine, which had a compression ratio of 7.5 to 1, with the twin H-Power dual carb upgrade, could make a fairly impressive 170 horsepower. But even before these upgrades, the Hudson Hornet found success in stock car racing. The history of stock car racing starts with Prohibition, the banning of creating liquor within the United States. Prohibition went into effect in 1920, and the weird thing about it was not illegal to drink liquor, it was just illegal to create liquor, to manufacture it. So, as long as someone was willing to break the law and create liquor, there was definitely a market for it, because people actually wouldn't be breaking the law if they could get their hands on it and drink it. So, a little bit of a weird law, but really, drinking it was not the problem, just manufacturing it was. And of course, if there is demand, most likely there will be a supply, and people started making homemade liquor, which is called moonshine. And this moonshine needed to be transported across counties, across states, to where it was being bought. In order to accomplish this, the people manufacturing the liquor would use cars that looked very stock and would blend in with all the other cars on the road, so they could just sneakily and without suspicion get to where they needed to go in order to sell their product. The problem with this is if they did get found out, and they did get into a police chase, these cars couldn't outrun the law, and so they were kind of screwed, and they'd be easily caught. So what they started to do was they would modify these cars to be much more powerful, and be able to outrun the police, while keeping them looking as stock as possible, so that they could hopefully blend in and not need to get into a chase. But if they did get into the chase, the modified cars would hopefully be able to outrun the cars used by law enforcement. And these moon runners, which was the name used for the people that transported liquor, were pretty ballsy and would brag about how they could fly along back roads at more than 120 miles per hour, seeing their way only by moonlight. Of course, this might be a bit of an exaggeration, but it was part of the culture. They really wanted to show off what their cars were capable of, and what they themselves were capable of. Naturally, these moonrunners started to race each other on weekends just for fun when they weren't worrying about moving product. Why not see who has the faster car and who is the better driver? And so they started doing little competitions, mostly on dirt roads, to show off their skills and show off their cars. By the time Prohibition ended in 1933, racing was still very popular among these moonrunners, and people would continue to modify their cars simply for the fun of racing. But the tradition of keeping the cars looking stock was kept around, and all the cars that were raced could be bought off a dealership floor. And then modifications could be made to the car to soup them up and make them a little bit more powerful, and a little bit more competitive. Today, as I mentioned, stock car racing is called NASCAR, and NASCAR is the governing body that essentially organized all of the stock car racing. For a long time, stock car racing was very much unorganized and sporadic throughout the country. There would be little groups doing racing here and there, and none of it was organized in any way. NASCAR came in and was really the ones that set up, okay, let's have a designated championship with a designated number of races and kind of just organize the whole mess that stock car racing was before NASCAR came in and organized it.
The AAA is supervising this national championship event, And here they come out of the fourth corner and down the straight. They're off.
Nowadays, NASCAR has moved significantly away from the cars actually being stock. They're supposed to look stock, but they don't even look stock. And that's mostly due to safety and other just natural progression of competition. The cars are very far from stock these days. However, they are impressively engineered and are pretty crazy cars. So it could be a fun future episode to look into what goes into modern NASCAR cars. If you'd be interested in that, make sure to let me know. However, back when stock car racing and NASCAR was getting started, the very first auto manufacturer to throw its support behind this very full-bred American racing series was Hudson. And they raced Hudson Hornets. And if a Hudson Hornet was being raced by the Hudson Company, these cars were called the Fabulous Hudson Hornets. And they would do extremely well with their overly engineered engine, their very low center of gravity, their sleek aerodynamics. They were a true force on the track. The Hornet would find its first win in the opening race of 1951 on the Daytona Beach and Road Course. The Hornet would also take the championship that year and again in 1953. And it even did well in between. In 1952, the Hudson Hornet would win 27 out of the 34 races that were held. The Hudson Hornet was an impressive stock car and did incredibly well for multiple years in a row. Unfortunately, on the other side, the Hudson Hornet was not doing well. Sales were falling significantly, and there were two main reasons for this drop in sales. The first was that other auto manufacturers could update the looks of their cars with little mechanical changes because they used ladder frame chassis. All they had to do was pull off the old body and drop the new-looking one on, and voila, you have an updated-looking car. And this helps draw in new buyers and keeps the car looking fresh with changes in the automotive industry. However, due to the step-down design of the Hornet, which, mechanically speaking, was very good as it improved the handling, it didn't allow the body to be easily swapped for a new, updated look. So the looks simply were not updated, and the car really started to show its age pretty quickly because all other auto manufacturers were constantly changing the looks of their cars, and Hudson Hornet really couldn't do that and just stayed the same. The second reason was that the car, the Hudson Hornet, was never given a V8. And America has this obsession with V8s. Despite the inline 6 being able to make a good amount of power, over 210 horsepower if the engine was equipped with a modification that Hudson called the 7-X, and the fact that an inline 6 is lighter than a V8, but at that time no one really cared that much about weight, they were more interested in horsepower figures. This really put a burden on selling the Hornet. People wanted V8s, and people would definitely skip over the Hornet simply due to the lack of this kind of engine being offered. For those curious, the 7-X upgrade allowed for higher compression, an upgraded camshaft, and other upgraded severe usage parts, so again, just high-performance parts, and it was just a very race-oriented, upgraded version of the Hornet. Technically speaking, the Hornet would continue to be made until 1957, but after 1954, they were not true Hudson Hornets, as Hudson had been sold and merged with Nash Calvinator to form American Motor Corporation, or AMC. And after this merge, the Hornets that were made were simply rebadged Nash models that did okay in sales, but never found success in racing. These Nash Hornets were actually eventually given a V8. So if you want to get weirdly technical, you could say that the Hornet was given a V8, but the Hudson Hornet was not given a V8. But that's a little too technical, and in my book, the Hudson Hornet basically ended production in 1954 with the merging of Hudson and Nash. In total, 24,833 true Hudson Hornets were made. Of course, this car would potentially be forgotten if it wasn't for Doc, the character in the animated film Cars, which was the fabulous Hudson Hornet after his racing prime. So we can all thank the wonderful movie of Cars for keeping the Hudson Hornet in the public eye. That's going to be it for the episode on the Hudson Hornet. I hope you enjoyed. If you'd like to support the podcast, the number one way to do that is to leave reviews and to follow the podcast on whichever platform you are listening. Also, recommending the podcast to any friends or family who you think might enjoy it means a ton. You're also welcome to follow me on my social media. My Instagram is automotive.podcast. My Twitter is @automotivepod, and my Facebook is @automotivepodcast. I post car facts and will let you know about upcoming episodes. Other than that, I hope you enjoyed, and I will see you next week.